Hey there, filmmakers. This is Herschel Zahn coming at you with another exciting episode of the Film Aspire podcast. Film Aspire is an FYL entertainment company. Please head over to FYLentertainment.com where you can find out information on all sorts of things going on in the Film Aspire world, the Acting for Your Life world, and the overall FYL entertainment world. Since I've already mentioned it, we'll go ahead and get some plugs out of the way here at the very top of the podcast. First and foremost, my sister station, the Acting for Your Life podcast at actingforyourlife.podomatic.com. That is the podcast of Miss Catherine Ray Furrow, who is acting guru and directing guru and guru of just about anything you needed to be a guru on in that moment. She can help you out. That is our partnership with FYL Entertainment. She's Acting for Your Life. I am Film Aspire, and it's working out really, really well. You can look up both podcasts via iTunes for Film Aspire. The keyword would be Film Aspire, and Acting for Your Life, keyword Acting for Your Life. I'd also like to introduce a new partner in the FYL world. We are joining forces and going to be promoting with a new company in Louisville, Kentucky called Thoughtfly Key and Grip. That is Duncan Pop and Joe Laurie. They are amazing DPs, gaffers, equipment guys, just major, major tech heads, and they are indie friendly. So do check them out, thoughtfly.com. They are at Butchertown Studios. They have joined forces with Matt Niehoff and Brian Cunningham over there with Thoughtfly Films, and just all around great people to work with. So please do check them out, thoughtfly.com. All right, so here we are. It's another Friday. We're heading into a wonderful weekend of shooting. Now, if some of you were on the way to see the FYL Entertainment presentations at the Dead Winter Horror Convention going on this weekend in Somerset, Kentucky, unfortunately, you will be disappointed. We had some things come up with the film that we are currently working on, and we have got to get some immediate attention to that film. So we will not be appearing at the Dead Winter Horror Con this weekend. We will be rescheduling some events in that area. We're looking at some different areas to do new workshops and presentations in the near future. We will be back in the Northeast in New York coming in April, and we are working on locations and dates and times for areas in Nashville, Boston, Miami, and somewhere out west in the St. Louis region. So keep up to date with FYL.com, FYLentertainment.com, and we'll have more information on those dates as we go. So today I want to talk about a topic that came to me in a very interesting way. Now, I've had topics that have come from conversations at conventions, conversations at film festivals, things that come up in my class, people email me, all different ways I get topics. And one of the more interesting ways that I get topics on filmmaking brought to me is when I'm at my day job, which, you know, I do still have a day job. I almost said unfortunately. And I want to just briefly talk about that. And then this totally off topic, tangent alert, going on a tangent. I almost said, unfortunately, I still have a day job. But, you know, I live in an area that is not exactly a mecca of film. There's not a lot of work in this area. There is work, and I do very often get paid and get paid very well to do the work that I do in this area. But it is not enough to sustain myself, you know, my cars, my home, all those things. It's supplemental income for me right now. I do have a day job with a major corporation. And that is okay. And I want to tell each and every one of you who have not been able to make that leap into filmmaking full time or into acting or into painting or whatever it is, it's okay for you to have a day job while you're working on your passion. If you are struggling with that, there's a few things that you can do, and that this is a whole nother podcast, but you basically just have to work on your, you know, work your day job until you get your passion. And when, you know, you're making more money with your passion than you are your day job, that's when you quit. There's a lot of formulas out there. And I think I may make that actually the topic of our next podcast, joint podcast, the FYL podcast that we'll be doing here frequently with Catherine and I. We'll make a point to do a podcast on how you transition from the day job world into the full-time entertainment arts world. But that's not my point. At my day job, we have these little things that we have to do from time to time as part of our monthly goals, and we have this system that's set up. It's called the Learning Center, and we go on there, and we have to do these different modules on whatever the top hot topic of the week. Sometimes it's leadership, sometimes it's, you know, time management, goal setting, all these different things. And this month we were told to just go pick one. And, you know, usually it's what can I find that I can do within an hour? And we all kind of share a group because they don't really care if we each do an individual one or if we all do the same one. And I was asked to actually within my group of my social circle there at work to find one to do. And I was looking through the topics and this thing came up, overcoming problems with delegation. And that really struck me. That struck me not only for the work that I do in my company, which I'm in the training department, and we do classes with three or four instructors, and we do struggle with delegation sometimes because you'll have an alpha person and, you know, raising hand, usually me, that takes over the class and really ends up doing much more of the work than everybody else. Not because they have to, but because they're not willing to delegate out the responsibility. So I thought that would be a really, really great tool just for us in our office environment. And as I got into this little module about delegation, and it was actually about the problems with delegation and why delegation failed. And that got me thinking, well, why does delegation fail on a film set? And as I'm doing this module, I keep thinking about all the reasons that they're giving for a corporate environment. The exact same reasons that delegation fails in a corporate environment are the exact same reasons that it fails, you know, on a film set or on a theater production or any type of artistic endeavor where more than one artist is collaborating for one final product. You're going to get delegation issues because everybody wants to be in charge. Everybody wants to serve their own artistic vision. There's a lot of different things that go along there. So I really wanted to bring this information to you. And this is one of the rare times on the Film Aspire podcast I actually have a page full of notes. Usually we're just kind of talking off the cuff here. And you'll have to forgive me. I'm talking into my laptop via my iPhone's headset, and I'm in the car waiting on food to be cooked. And so that's why you're going to hear a little tapping of this microphone against my shirt every now and again. But we were just talking about delegation and why delegation fails. So they gave really four reasons why delegation can fail in a corporate environment. And I'm going to apply each of these things to a film set. The first reason they gave was overcommitting top performers. Second one was giving unclear direction. Third was nitpicking and expecting perfection. And the fourth was failing to set up adequate communication. Okay, and they were talking about between departments. All right, so let's analyze each one of those as they pertain to a film. Overcommitting top performers. Okay, you may have on your crew, and we're not going to talk about actors. This is more about crew. You may ask on your indie film set, because on a Hollywood film set, you know, everybody has a very specific job, and it's all union regulated. So there is really no, you do this, 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 and this, I'll take care of these five things. You know, it's usually a small group of people who are going to cover what sometimes on a Hollywood set would take 300 people over the course of the film to cover. They're going to do the same amount of work with three or four people. So you really do have to delegate. So if you have one person who is, you know, say very tech savvy, he knows all about the camera, he knows all about the lighting, he knows all about the sound, you may be tempted as the producer and or the director to really allow that individual to run everything related to camera, lighting, and sound. And, you know, that could, on a Hollywood set, that could end up being 15 people's jobs that you're trying to assign out to one person. So just because you can assign multiple jobs out to one individual doesn't mean you necessarily should, because you could do burnout. They could get very, very tired, feel like they're doing all of these different things, and they're not able to accomplish all the tasks adequately. Okay, and then sometimes you're assigning tasks to people who don't know what they're doing. That was one of the things they talked about, was insufficient technical know-how or insufficient knowledge to do a job. If you're asking, you know, a film school first year student to do complicated things with lighting that they may not be able to do, then you're going to get an undesirable result, meaning it's not going to be up to the standards that you as the director were looking for. And more often than not, it's not going to be up to the standards that that person would like to be able to deliver to you. So you're setting up someone to fail in that instance. So by overcommitting a top performer who knows everything and can't give 100% of themselves to one job, let alone the 15 that you're trying to assign, or trying to assign multiple jobs or jobs that have too much technical know-how to somebody who doesn't know how to do it, that can be setting someone up to fail. So that's one way that delegation breaks down, is just trying to overcommit or assigning somebody something that they don't know how to do. The next thing was giving unclear direction. Now this, I think, more often than not, this one and the next one that we're going to talk about, Expecting Perfection. This one, I think, is the biggest Achilles heel to a lot of filmmakers. They don't give clear directions. They give generalities. And generalities aren't good, especially when you're a director trying to let your crew know what you need to bring your artistic vision to life. And this is especially true with actors. Directors who give generalities to actors are going to get very general performances. If you need something specific out of an actor, you have to be very specific with them. If you want the director of photography to set up a shot in a very particular way, you need to discuss it with him. Okay, and then he may point out problems with that. And you need to understand that you have hired that individual for their expertise as a director of photography, and you should listen to them. On my sets, I generally operate as both director and director of photography. I'm only just now getting to the point that I'm comfortable enough to bring other artists in and say, okay, you be in charge of the camera, I'm going to direct. Now, I've had several instances where I have been the director of photography for other directors, so I'm used to that side of it. But I have not really done a whole lot of work where I've been the director and the director of photography is another individual who's going to be monitoring everything photographically for the film that I'm directing. So that's a very new thing for me because I'm a shooter-director. I know a lot of indie directors who do not know anything about cameras. They can direct actors. They understand how to communicate their vision, or they want to understand how to communicate their vision, but they don't know how to actually make it happen within the confines of the camera, so they have to hire a second person. If you're hiring somebody for whatever reason, you need to trust that person. You need to trust the decision that you made in that person, and don't just hire somebody because you heard from somebody else that they have the technical know-how. You need to be really focusing in and checking out the movies that they've done, check out their demo reels, and they should have a demo reel they can send you. If not, they should put one together and really check into these people, figure out who it is that you're talking to. Giving unclear direction can sometimes just lead to breakdowns in communication. When I worked on Bad Blood, we had an issue with that the first assistant director wanted very specific things from us as production assistants, as the PAs. But because of the nature of the film, and we basically shot a feature film in 9 days, he never really had the time, or maybe more importantly, took the time to sit down with the production assistants and tell us exactly what he expected during the shoot. And one of those things was simply a call and response when he yelled roll sound over the radio. He expected all of us to scream from wherever we were on set, rolling, because there was six of us, and we were all positioned on different parts of the set. So he expected to hear us give that command back verbally to let everybody else know that we were getting ready to roll. And if he had and this was on day like 4 or 5 of the production that he finally sat down and had this conversation with us, and he was getting really frustrated because it wasn't happening. But he was from California. He was used to working on Hollywood low budget sets, and he wasn't used to what was going on here working with a local crew. So if he had simply taken the time to give us clear direction on what he wanted, we would have done it happily. Now, some argument could be made that, you know, we should have known to do that one way or another. I disagree with that, because literally every professional set, theatrical production, anything that I've ever worked on works just a little bit differently. Each show, each production, whatever you want to call it, it always has just a slight difference for the particular production company that you're working for. So there are standards, but you really do have to sit down each and every time you put a new group of people together to work on a project and let them know what is expected of you. Now, nitpicking and expecting perfection. If you delegate a job to somebody, trust them to do it. This also can be called micromanaging. I hate directors who micromanage. Okay, that's the director that says, okay, you're going to be the director of photography and you're going to cover all the lighting. Okay, go do that. And then they're moving the lights and telling you where to put the camera and do, oh, let's do this, let's do that. Now, a director, of course, should have input on such things and maybe ask if it can be done, but they shouldn't just go do it. Okay, if you're going to say you're in charge of this, let the person be in charge of it. And don't always expect perfection. Now, I did a podcast on this not too long ago called The Enemy of Good. People, I think, get this misconception that every single shot and every single take of their film has to be perfect. Perfect. Absolute, utter perfection. It doesn't work like that. Perfection is something that happens because you've done everything right. Okay? Not every single take of every single frame of your film is going to be done exactly right. It may be close. It may be good. And you need to be okay with that. You need to be okay with good work. Good enough, that's not good. Okay? Good enough is you've shot something, you've tried it 4, 5, 6, maybe 7, up to 10 times. It's just not working. And you throw your hands up and say, okay, whatever happens on this take, we're going to take it. It's good enough. Okay? That will inevitably lead to unhappy times in post-production because you will end up smacking yourself in the face saying, if I had just done one more take. Okay, and this is something I teach when I'm talking about how many takes to do on a shot. I don't believe there's any particular number of takes you should do on a shot. I shoot something until I can sleep at night, and then I do one more for safety. Okay, and if maybe you get that perfect shot, you get it. But don't just expect arbitrarily that every single take of your film is going to be perfect, because it's just not. There's going to always be a slight thing with the lighting or the actor's timing wasn't exactly right. And you can try a couple of different ways and maybe you'll get some of those elements together, and maybe sometimes everything's going to work. The sun moves just at the right time, the gaffer moves the thing just in the right way, the actor hits the timing perfect, and it's perfect. I would expect to see at least 1 to 3 perfect moments in each film. Okay? That's just, and it's just something that happens, but you did everything right. And sometimes you do everything right and it's just not going to work. You need to, and you have to learn to accept good work. Now, stuff that's substandard, people not trying, actors showing up, you know, late after partying, not knowing their lines, all that stuff, that's when you can end up running the risk of settling for good enough when you've tried all that and people aren't doing their jobs. And that's when you're really going to run into regret later on. But if you get the right team of people together and everybody's doing their best and it looks good, may not be perfect, but it's good, you need to learn to accept that. All right, and the second thing, fourth thing is failing to set up good communication, okay? And this can happen in a number of ways. You know, you have somebody who's on set trying to block traffic and they don't have a radio or not a, you know, you're not staying in constant contact. You forget about them and they let a car through at the wrong time, or they're sitting up there and they have blocked off traffic. They've got 10, 15 cars backed up and then a cop shows up and shuts down the production. That's failing to set up good communication. In your pre-production time, that can be, oh, we're going to do everything via Facebook Messenger, except that two critical members of your team are somewhere still trying to live under a rock and they don't have a Facebook account, so they get left out of the loop. You've got to make sure that you have adequate and good communication across all levels of your production, from pre-production periods all the way through production, all the way through post-production. The people that need to be in the loop need to be kept in the loop. And that sometimes can take extra legwork on the part of you or your executive producers or the team that you've assembled. You have to make sure that you have good, adequate, healthy communication across all parts of your production. Okay? And if you do all those things, your delegation that you've chosen to do will work out for you. Okay? Now, this whole podcast is, and maybe I should have made that a little more clear at the beginning. This podcast is not about how to delegate. This is how to make your delegation successful. Okay? Delegating is a hard thing, and it's something that I personally, as a filmmaker, have struggled with, because I started out as a filmmaker working with a group of theater actors that didn't understand the technology, didn't understand how to work the cameras, how to do the editing, how to do any of it. I was the only one that knew how to do it, and I did it all happily and, you know, would delegate the jobs that I could delegate out, but most of it I had to do myself. Now, as I'm growing and as I'm doing bigger, better things, I have to delegate, and no man is a one-man army. Even Robert Rodriguez has to delegate some responsibilities to some other people, and he is the ultimate one-man crew guy. So this podcast is really a great tool to help you make sure that your delegation is successful. And you have to delegate to do this thing we call filmmaking. I always say filmmaking is the ultimate collaborative artistic sport. It's a team sport. You can't do a film wholly by yourself. You could. I mean, there's ways. But the greatest films out there come from true collaboration between really, really good, enthusiastic artists. Okay, we're going to wrap up the podcast on that note. Again, just to reiterate, we will not be appearing at the Dead Winter Horror Con in Somerset, Kentucky this weekend. However, if you're in the Somerset area, I highly recommend that you get down there to one of the best cons in the Middle Kentucky region. It's just everything awesome's going on. They've got Tony Todd down there. They've got several of the Walking Dead cast members. Victor Brooke Miller, who is, of course, the father of Jason Voorhees. We had him on the podcast last year. There's just actors. There's directors. There's paranormal stuff. A lot of the Ghost Hunter guys are down there. It's just a great time. Anytime you can get out to a horror convention, it's going to be the most fun you can possibly have in a weekend. So I highly recommend you get down there. Dead Winter Horror Convention. I believe the website is deadwinterhorror.com or deadwinterhorror.com. Con.com. Check those guys out. Brian and Samantha, if you're listening to the podcast, congratulations on your wedding tomorrow. I'm sorry I can't be there. We have got wonderful things going on here in the FYL realm. Please get over to Catherine's podcast and check it out, actingforyourlife.podomatic.com. If you have any show topic suggestions, questions, or comments about anything we've discussed on the podcast previously, please do send me an email to filmaspire@live.com. Now, that website information will be changing. We're just about done with our big rebranding and the bringing together of all these websites. You will soon be able to go to fylentertainment.com and access everything that we do. That's the Film Aspire podcast. That's Acting for Your Life. That's Sentimental Journey, our music group. That's the workshops. That's the everything that we do will be centered right there at fylentertainment.com. So look that up. We've got some placeholder sites up there. Exciting things coming. We've got videos coming. We've got new products. The books are coming. Oh, it's an exciting time to be in my world right now. And last thing, if you look up at the title, you will see that this is episode 70. We are almost at 3 years of this podcast. We've got 70 episodes out there. I couldn't be more proud. Proud of the podcast, of the work that we've done, and just so incredibly, incredibly grateful for all of our listeners all the way around the world. Over 30,000 of you in 43 countries around the world. That just still blows my mind that I'm sitting in my car outside a Pizza Hut in Jeffersonville, Indiana, speaking to the world. I love the world we live in. We live in a great time. Everything is at our fingertips. We can all do it. Band together, work together, delegate responsibility, and get out there and tell some stories.